You're listening to episode 11 of the Where Your Keys Language Fluency Game Podcast with me, Willem Larson, recorded on March 31st, 2010. In this episode, you'll hear Evan and I talking about the issues around choosing which sign language to use as your bridge language, and also the topic of universal language, and does Where Your Keys offer a universal language for learning languages. The other day, we got an email from Stefan in Cologne, Germany, who posed us a really interesting question. There is a local signed language for local deaf Germans, and of course, this is very common. Right, Evan?
Yes. Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah. It's very common. It's sort of...
worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah. I don't know if there's an impression out there, but I think there is, that there's one signed language for all deaf people everywhere, and that's just absolutely not true. And so that's one of the diversity of language and dialect that certainly Where Your Keys is the capacity to address. But his question, Stefan's question, was, is it more effective to go with the ASL as a universal language of Where Your Keys teaching and learning the game? Or should he instead go with the local signed language in Cologne, Germany? And so that the players can then speak to local deaf people along with learning the language, the spoken target language that they're going for, which happens to be French. Of course, they're right on the border with France. So what do you think about that?
This brings up a myriad of conundrums.
Yeah.
and I think that this is a real sort of source for debate for well, worldwide audiences. Issue one, Where Your Keys uses signed language and the added benefit of taking the total physical response to its ridiculous end.
Yes.
Making total physical response part of the language learning process itself. So Dustin Rivers brought up a really interesting point the other day. He was like, how do you do total physical response for a verb like do?
Yeah.
How do you act out do? Well, you can act out swimming, you can act out eating, you can act out a lot of stuff, but how do you total physical response do? Well, that's why we have signed language, and that's why we attach the sign language, so that we don't have to actually act out everything, that we can attach a sign language to the spoken language that we're trying to learn.
Yeah.
Well, so then we have some choices. Do we use ASL, mm-hmm, sign for do? Do we use French from France signed language? So deaf community in France signed language for the word do. Or do we use Quebec deaf community signed language for do? You know, these are
or German sign language for do.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
There's actually several options there.
Yeah, so these guys are in Germany.
Yes.
Trying to learn French and are wondering, well, do we use German sign? Do we use French sign? Mm-hmm. Do we use American sign? Do we use... I mean, really, this is quite a conundrum.
Honestly, I don't even think they thought of the issue of French sign language. They were just thinking about German or ASL.
So I think that... I don't think so either. It didn't strike me as they were thinking about that. But the other interesting thing that Stefan mentioned was, well, you know, wouldn't it be handy if we all had one universal sign language that we could have a common language with, especially using Where Your Keys, mm-hmm, which I think is certainly an option, because then we could have, as soon as different people learn Where Your Keys using ASL and pidgin signed English and sign manual English, then in whatever Where Your Keys fashion that we have modified it into, then we could have a universal bridge language, so that if I were to learn, say, Chinookwawa here in Oregon, and then I want to go to Cologne and learn French because Stefan has figured out a really sweet way to use Where Your Keys and speak French, it's going to be very handy if he has also used the Where Your Keys signs, so that I can just jump right into the conversation. and have a universal access point.
Sure.
So that's a one issue for speed. Mm-hmm. Would certainly be that we have a worldwide sign language that everybody knows, at least as far as the game goes, mm-hmm. The Wear Your Keys game, up to like want, have, give, take kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like at least so, and in that would be the and, but, for, if, then, or kind of Craigslist, mm-hmm. all the little filler words. But if you are trying to learn a language, signed languages also around the world are also going extinct. They are certainly not the most safe languages on the planet as far as numbers and communities
right,
that
right.
speak. You know, even to a certain extent, ASL in the United States is, you know, it has its moments of strength and weakness.
Absolutely.
So then it would seem like if you were trying to learn French, that you would want to attach as much French attitude as you could to the learning of your French. Well, if you have people who are deaf in France, they are going to use gestures that are culturally appropriate to French attitude and to French life. And so by learning a French sign language, your ability to play charades and your ability to language hunt in France are going to increase because French sign language is going to be more culturally adapted than to France and to French than German sign language is
Absolutely.
To French. So,
well,
and then
can I jump in here for,
yeah.
because I, here's the problem with, ASL. So you pointed out that French sign language is married to French culture. And then the danger with thinking of ASL, and I certainly haven't made up my mind about this, but the danger with thinking of ASL as sort of this universal language of Where Your Keys means that American culture then becomes sort of the universal language of Where Your Keys, which is like it makes it somewhat invisible rather than admitting upfront, look, like if you use American sign to a certain extent, you're going to be borrowing American concepts to learn your target language, even if it's, you know, the most, you know, unusual, unlike language on the dark side of the moon, you know, it has nothing to do with American culture. You know, you have this risk of even the way like American sign language is counting and, colors and like
pointing,
you know, even the act of pointing could be a taboo act in the other culture. And you could change, there's opportunities to change American Sign Language in specific ways. And that's certainly, Evan's done that and I've done that and Dustin Rivers is doing that and with Squamish. But it's there. It's sort of, you know, just because sign language is feels really different to a spoken language, like a hearing person, like an American person, doesn't mean that the American Sign Language is free of American associations.
Well, yeah. Well, and to be able to be a little bit free with it, to know that we are using this more pigeon signed English, yeah. which is more of a sign. Each sign means a word, or each sign means a concept, is a little bit different because it follows also English grammar structure.
Right.
ASL has its own grammar structure that does not follow English
at all.
But so to do that, to sort of loosely then kind of start associating, and building a different grammar structure to fit the target language is, you know, the point of Where Are Your Keys, that you are going to. The signs that you're going to learn are going to be mapping one-to-one with your target language grammar structure.
Yeah.
It's still, however, enough that you have enough signs under your belt by the time you can have any kind of ability speaking also, is that you have enough signs under your belt that you could engage in a conversation with a deaf person,
yeah.
and they're going to then teach you the grammar.
Right.
of their sign language.
Absolutely.
So you'll have all the words, and then they will show you how to put Humpty Dumpty together, and then you go language hunt the language structure
mm-hmm.
From your newly found French deaf friend.
Yep.
But to be able to tie the to be able to tie the signed language with the target language, I think, is the most appropriate leap that you could make in trying to tie some signed language to the target language you're working on. Here's a big issue, though. I suspect that, let's say, French Sign Language for hard-of-hearing deaf in France, they have not adapted their sign language to the Where Your Keys game.
Right.
So they have not applied Where Your Keys to their signed language, which is going to slow down anyone trying to learn the French sign language so that they can apply it to spoken French.
Right.
So my recommendation would be that they use the Where Your Keys, pigeon signed English, American Sign Language sort of style to get the game down, to understand the game.
Yeah.
Then hunt your target language, and as you find a deafy there in France,
yeah,
now you can develop the Where Your Keys game in that sign language.
Yeah.
For the love of God, send us video of that.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Because there is this overarching speed factor that would be if we could have if Willem and I and our other Where Your Keys players could run a 1,000-person Where Your Keys workshop at the Superdome for right. And then send all of those players out into the world to learn to organize learning lessons in the Where Your Keys fashion, and also to organize the local signed language into Where Your Keys fashion that would carry the spoken language. Well, we would make a massive, and I mean massive, impact on world languages. Mm-hmm. Not only spoken languages, but also signed languages.
Yeah.
That are going by the wayside, especially, just to pull the point back to North America, is that there are all these sign languages throughout, the sort of famous Plains Indian Sign Language that is in real trouble. I mean, those guys are in real trouble. That system is almost gone.
Yeah.
And then you have each of the individual communities also had their own sign languages.
Absolutely.
So it's not even a thing where people say like, oh, well, ASL is the world, this one world language of sign.
Yeah.
Well, it's not. Just like English is not a world, it's not the world language. It's
right.
One of them, but certainly there are other people who in their home communities speak their home language. And when they go into an international setting, they start speaking English.
Yeah.
Where they used to start speaking French, and then before that they were speaking Latin and as it went on down through the history of lingua franca.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and in North America for a time that certainly was, Plains Indian Sign Language. But that would be a certainly an interesting thing to take on for Indian languages. I would prefer to be using Indian Sign instead of ASL and PS and Pidgin Signed English.
Right.
But then, well, whose sign language do we pick? It almost becomes a question of, well, who's around still?
Right.
who do we have?
Yeah. And in the end, I mean, the spirit of Where Are Your Keys is start with the most successful piece. Start where you're at. So,
Well, that's also the technique most likely to succeed.
Exactly. So technique most likely to succeed means do the thing that's going to work rather than the idealized thing or the thing you think you should do but is really hard and you end up not doing or the thing that works for one case but not most of the cases. Or it's like so I'm with Stefan and I'm with his group of players and we're contemplating, we've learned Where Your Keys ASL from the videos. Which is, apparently how it's going to work
yep.
for now, And so now we're contemplating, wow, do we switch to German sign language? And maybe it hasn't even come up that we go for French sign language. Well, in all honesty, if there's a German signed language interpreter, right? If there's somebody with those skills, which I think Stefan mentioned having, that person, in my mind, is going to be the strongest resource they have at this point in time to move forward with applying sign to spoken language. So the for learning the, you know, where your keys is a sort of a universal language. Yeah, it might be nice to have an ASL person there, but do they, you know, are they going to pull it off the internet? You know, honestly, pulling signs off of American Sign Language signs off of internet videos doesn't work as well as it might seem.
Yeah.
You know, I
it's
mean,
close.
It's a great stopgap. I mean, it's definitely a wonderful resource, but people end up with some funky signs that way. And this is a game about learning from other fluent human beings, not from, not, and only secondly from media, from books or videos. Certainly that's part of it. But the primary point of Wear Your Keys is learning from fluent human beings and treating them as the most important resource. So going with this signed German person, not only is there an instant benefit in learning the local German sign language, but they're your resource. Now, what if they have access to a French sign language speaker or even interpreter? Well, that would be pretty awesome. Is that the case? I mean, if it isn't the case, then it's not going to be most likely to succeed, because then here's something that I've noticed happens, that we teach people to language hunt at our workshops, and we've realized that there's a piece missing because we check in, hey, have you hunted any languages? I mean, you were flying at the end of the workshop. You were ready to go. What languages have you hunted? Oh, I'm still looking for a speaker of Hungarian. Oh, I'm still looking for that someone who can speak French. I'm really excited. I mean, I have friends who, you know, speak Spanish and, you know, and German, and but I'm still, you know, I'm
like, well then pick Spanish and go with that. Like, yeah. Go hang out with your friend who already speaks Spanish and learn Spanish until you find somebody who actually speaks the language that you want to learn.
And while I pull this knife out of my heart and and like go to the emergency room, I mean, the point of Wear Your Keys is not to wait for the perfect situation.
It's take advantage of every possible moment that you have.
Yes.
Under whatever circumstances are presented to you.
Yes. To see your situation as an opportunity in the way it is an opportunity. To see the ways in which you can most benefit from what you have right now and to move forward with that. Like you are living in a ideal situation for whatever you've got.
Yeah.
So
I know that sounds a little bit like sort of like rose colored glasses kind of thing. But really, the chances of you actually changing your living situation to accommodate this are pretty slim, because if that were the case, well, you would have already done it.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, here's an interesting like tidbit about I was hearing this thing about like recruiting suicide bombers.
Yeah.
It's actually difficult to find a suicide bomber because, well, if you're really contemplating suicide, you've already killed yourself.
Right.
So, I mean, it's difficult to round up somebody who, like, is really serious about that.
Yeah, they're not – part of the suicidal thing is not wanting to talk to other people about it. No, I never knew until it already happened. So it's
right.
Like
– right. And that's kind of what we have to deal with sort of every day, is this reality of, well, people are living the lives that they're living.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they're enjoying the lives that they're living, and that's wonderful. And then they're looking for ways to improve that life. Well, it may be a thing where it's you know, these series of baby steps that,
right,
that get you there.
Right.
And
that sounds familiar. Did
yeah.
you just say a technique?
Well, a series of baby steps.
Yes, technique, baby steps.
Baby steps.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there is the opportunity that they have the ability to, I would say invite Willem and I, which is why we're always sort of pushing this idea, is that we are really serious about learning language from other living people.
Right.
So that you get the full richness of that experience. And so by learning this mentoring language, that also comes from, you know, us as humans going and really giving you that real hands-on live action training that can really move an entire community miles in minutes. So that's step one, I think. Mm-hmm. If that's not available, then look at the website and see if you can pick up enough sign from it to run a Wear Your Keys game.
Yes.
Also, talk to your fluent German sign language person and learn German sign language.
Yeah.
And you know, language hunt German sign language, mm-hmm. and then apply those signs to the French that you're about to learn.
Absolutely, yep.
And then as soon as someone, you know, sees that you're doing German signs, heck, I don't even know if those signs are close.
Yeah.
Chances are the signs are fairly close because it's just geography.
Certainly ASL is descended from French sign language, so, you know.
Yeah, there's seriously a chance for some loop back there. And also a very interesting PhD study for mm-hmm. some out there to watch how ASL would move from the U.S. back to Germany and then back through France and watch the metamorphosis that it goes through.
Yeah.
So soon on the Warrior Keys website, we will have a little button that says potential PhD studies for all those folks out there who are looking at a PhD study and just don't know where to go. Well, we have at this moment probably about 1,000 very interesting PhD topics.
Yeah, and that would be one of them.
Would be one.
Yeah, the network and dialectification of sign, you know, as, you know, like where did the French sign language come from? You know, where did...
Where did the German sign language come from? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Where is it at now and who the heck took it there?
Yeah.
So I would say in that order would be learn the Where Your Keys stuff.
Okay, yeah. Let's set that really specifically. So what's number one?
Learning the Where Your Keys game by having Willem and Evan, you and I, go to a community and do a weekend workshop.
Okay, that's the... If you want ideal, that's ideal. Now,
wait. If you really want ideal, yeah. I mean, if you really want ideal, it's you all from the world come to our workshop in April.
Yeah.
10th and 11th and 12th?
12th and 13th.
12th and 13th.
Yes.
2010 in mm-hmm. San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Pleasanton, California, to be specific. And... then go back to your home communities.
Yeah.
Invite us to go with you back to your home communities. And then we will invite everyone from around the world who's played Where Your Keys at our various workshops to come to your community.
Right.
And we all play a fantastic Where Your Keys weekend workshop.
Right.
That would be ideal.
Absolutely. Right.
Just the perfect case scenario.
Step one, come to us. Step two, take it home, bringing us and everybody else who's part of the Where Your Keys community. And then step three.
Developing your language-specific Where Your Keys game.
Absolutely.
Developing mm-hmm. the actual lesson plan, because every language is going to have some tricks that need to be dealt with. Just like Dustin is really owning the game itself by realizing that the mine and yours... come up way before me and you, so he doesn't even bring it up for the first couple of lessons because right. it's a waste of time. Now we don't know anything about that. We don't know how German is going to play out or how French is going to play out mm-mm. in this actual style. And frankly, on the planet, as far as I know, no one else does either.
Right.
Because we haven't had a Where Your Keys community really cook this in German or French.
Right. Right.
So as soon as that gets cooked, then Now you play it with your community and use whatever signs you have contracted and come up with and conjured up and mm-hmm. and paid for to be able to use in this kind of way. Oh, and that you've also vetted as culturally appropriate so that you're not offending people left and right as you're
exactly.
throwing
exactly.
what you think are perfectly understandable gestures.
Yeah, right. Are actually offensive jabs at the other party. Yeah.
Perfectly intelligible offensive jabs.
Well, you know, and I think so this sheds light on, I mean, Stefan asked, you know, does there need to be a universal language of Where Your Keys? And every time I hear someone say universal language, you know, to benefit humanity, I get chills, right? Because it's the universal languages that usually have heavy economic components, you know, globalization components, like Hindu, English is really the chief offender, but Chinese is certainly up there. These languages consume other languages, and the history of the modern era is the history of cultures being squashed in favor of cultures that have a greater economic impact. So there's sort of a, I think there's a sort of intrinsic modern training, you know, being part of the global modern culture to go, hey, we need a universal thing that'll make things easier and faster. And the thing is the easier and faster part, like wear your keys ASL up to want, have, give, take, in my mind is a kind of seed. It's not a universal language. It's not, you know, it is what it is. It's a seed. It's a starting point. It's the first bite-sized piece. Beyond that, once you learn that piece, and if you learn it down, you know, if you learn it by heart, then you now have the ability to apply it to your local sign language, whatever that may be, or a more appropriate sign language for your target language. So like this funny situation that Stefan has, is it ASL German or maybe even French sign language, right? Well, it's up to you, but essentially there doesn't need to be a universal language of where your keys. There's only a common starting point. Like there's a, which even Evan and I, you know, we modify depending on circumstances. You know, we're always playing with how well designed is that starting point to which crowd. You know, who do we give Travels with Charlie to at the beginning, and who do we throw it out the window and go, we just need to play. You know, we're always tweaking that. So rather than, you know, the beauty of Where Your Keys is the fact that it is hungry for all the little dialects and all the little wrinkles, and it can't really be slowed down by a love of the small little differences between one dialect to another. It thrives on that, you know? So it's not like that textbook that needs everything. You know, we need a standard orthography and we need a standardized way of speech for everybody in our area for everything to be gooder and better and us to be economically viable. It's like, well, yeah, but with Where Are Your Keys, you actually have the tools to learn 100 different dialects of your language. Like, why the heck not? It's not an inconvenience. It can be a way of life. And the more you play, the more you language hunt, the better at language hunting you get. It's sort of the whole point. So if you try and make it too convenient and too fast and efficient, well, how much language hunting are you really learning? And you don't want to overwhelm yourself with chasing down every odd little dialect from the beginning. You want to do what is most likely to succeed from the beginning. Also,
and limit. I think you're throwing out limit there a little bit.
Yeah, technique limit. You know, technique and yet the technique and yet the whole point of playing Where Are Your Keys is learning the technique language, which I know from personal experience when I'm playing with somebody, I can either go for pure language proficiency and just, you know, turn on the afterburners and they learn a much more limited sense of how to play the game and don't become very good language hunters, but boy, can they speak. Or I can flip it and go, you know, no, it's a one-to-one thing. When I leave the table, they need to be able to keep hunting on their own. I don't want to cripple them by being their only source for learning the language. Or maybe, you know, whoever is a really good language hunter, they have to go beg at their feet for more language. You know, the goal really is to create language hunters.
And in that goal of creating language hunters, you get language teachers. But right. Just like you were saying, well, I'm like, you are a fantastic teacher. Mm-hmm. And so you get somebody and you want to turn on the afterburners and just, you know, load them with just a bunch of language ability, just straight target language ability. And they leave the table going, wow, man, I can speak a lot. That Willem guy, he's a great teacher. I don't want to learn from anybody else. Well, that has just crippled everybody, because now the person isn't necessarily interested or able to teach. They aren't going to go language hunt other people. And, you know, you now have set yourself up as some sort of like God that they must come to, and no one else. No one else is worthy. Mm-hmm. And so to set up those kind of relationships is really dangerous as far as, you know, language revitalization and community language revitalization.
Yeah, it's handicapping.
All get there together.
Yeah.
It's not creating these language hunters. And language hunters are very good language teachers.
Yes.
Because they're language hunting themselves as they are offloading the information. They are trying to give this information out in a teaching fashion so that it can be repeated anywhere under any circumstance. And then they realize that there are gaps in their own information. Mm-hmm. And so they go and they language hunt their teacher who are going to fill in those specific gaps. So it's the whole, you know, oh, you learn by teaching. Well, you do, because if you're a very good hunter of information, while you're offloading information, mm-hmm. you're hunting yourself for holes.
Yeah.
And then you're able to then, with the student that you are offloading information, they are presumably language hunting back at you, also trying to find holes in their own and in your information. Not in a, in a way of ego, like, ha ha, I found a hole in your information.
Right.
But, okay, where are our holes? Where are the chinks in our armor? What do we need to know? Well, let's find out right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now here's, so now here's an interesting thing about the whole universal language, the universal speak curriculum.
Yeah, right. Uh-oh.
That also is a seed for how you start.
Yeah.
We have realized that the biggest issue that people are having is they don't know where to start.
Yeah.
And so universally around the world, here's where you start.
Yes.
You start with what is that?
What is that?
And that's where babies start.
You know, yours, yep.
Ever walked around with a little kid, at some point when they start getting a little bit of language under their belt, they'll start walking around going, what's that?
Yeah.
What's this?
Yeah.
What's that? Interestingly enough, going right for the whole this, that, these, and those, Craigslist.
Yeah, right, right.
So they go, what's this, what's that?
Yeah.
And then they hold up something that's clearly not theirs. Yeah. And point to mom, like mom's cigarette lighter. Mm. Ooh, that's a perfect example. They hold it up, they put it to their chest, and they go, mine?
Yeah.
Or a knife or something like that that they have to get a hold of. You know, a mom kind of walks over and goes, no, honey, not yours. Mine. You know, that's a massive language step. And so, you know, following the universal speak curriculum is your entry into language hunting, language acquisition, teaching. But it is not the end all be all.
Yeah.
It's just the starting point. It's the seed. So in effect, yes, there is a universal overarching concept that for speed to secure as many languages on the planet as quickly as possible, I think that there is a need for this universal overarching language. And then we have this other, but again, it's not the end all be all, because once you have that start, now it's really about embracing that dialect and those differences and knowing that you are now the new holder of this dialect or this specific chunk of information.
Right.
That the rest of the world, in their hunger for uniformity and universal system, have forgotten about.
Right.
Because it's not worth the effort.
Right.
Well, I certainly think it's worth all the effort.
Yeah.
But now, here's another little issue, is that Willem and I are doing all of this in English.
Mm.
All of this Where Are Your Keys stuff,
mm-hmm.
as far as the mentoring language itself and our explanations of it to the general world public, mm. are in English.
Yeah.
So, in effect, in order to learn this system very well, you need to speak English.
Right.
To some ability to understand these concepts that we're throwing out.
Right. Because
we're speaking generally in advanced and often in superior English, according
yes.
to. Now, another way you could do this is you could invite us to come to your home community.
Mm-hmm.
We would play Where Are Your Keys with you, and in about a couple weeks, be able to start explaining the techniques in your target language.
That's but the sound
as far as,
we would make.
Yeah, yeah, but that is the sound we would make the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for as far as like as far as the world is concerned, the globe of Earth. Yeah, that's not going to be very practical.
No.
Because that's going to take, you know, 2-3 weeks per language. And
right.
if there are, you know, some thousands of languages on the planets, we're going to have a tough time getting to everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, you know, if you think of what we're doing as seed work, we're seeding the world with a new way of looking at language revitalization and language learning and teaching. You know, all of those things we'll probably have to do a couple times. You know, we're already, you know, doing that to a certain extent with Squamish, where we're helping, you know, with the translation of the concepts into Squamish. And that's one of the cooler things Dustin is doing is immediately translating as many of the techniques as he can as soon as he really understands
the technique names.
Yeah, the technique names, like full, like... how fascinating. And
but he can't describe them in Squamish yet.
No, he can't actually
have a conversation like we're having in Squamish.
Exactly, exactly. But I mean, that's really like, you know, our purpose is to do whatever it takes to get communities going. And if what it takes is a couple of 2 week stays, you know, maybe a handful of 2 week stays around the world to get communities strong enough that they are now trained up, that they can help local endangered languages besides the one that we came to help, you know, or besides the heritage language, maybe it's not endangered, but, that now they're spreading out. The point is to get it moving, and transmit, you know, the skill set.
And certainly if they're coming at it with the same generosity that we're coming at this with, then we are all going to be able to share these fantastic nuggets of information that we all gather collectively to say, hey, here's the fastest way that we as a globe are going to eventually do this, which sort of brings up to mind that right now we're doing this in English. Willem and I are doing this in English, and other people are doing this in English.
Yes.
It could very well change in the next 20 years that Where Are Your Keys becomes Chinese-based.
Right.
Certainly, that could easily happen where the world understands Where Are Your Keys through a Chinese Uber lens.
Right. I mean, maybe, you know, you need to learn, play Where Are Your Keys, learn the Chinese, and then now you can talk about, in a superior sense, how Where Are Your Keys works, you know, whoever you are.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe, you know, maybe there's a more well-suited language for talking and describing Where Are Your Keys. Because we certainly found in English, trying to explain the game before the person has played it is really a lost cause.
And you know, we may find out that the best language to actually discuss language acquisition is, I don't know, Seminole.
Yeah.
Or Hindu or Arabic. I have no idea.
Yeah.
And I think that someone eventually is going to come along, or let me be very specific about that. Mm-hmm. Not someone is going to come along, but some group is going to come along. Some community is going to have used this, cooked it enough that they now understand it quite well. And I think they are going to be the model for how we go about describing the games and certain techniques and new techniques that we just can't even fathom at the moment.
Yeah, there's that funny thing, you know, Einstein, you know, in a certain sense was this fellow who changed the world with his general theory of relativity. And then what happened when the folks who were like, oh, well, then following on from there, quantum mechanics, quantum physics, and, you know, and makes sense. And these things we're noticing. And Einstein's response was, God doesn't play dice with the universe. You know, you guys are doing it wrong. You know, it's orderly and predictable, and it's not probabilistic. Well, so essentially what Evan and I are planning on is that somebody is going to come along and make us put us in that position, in the position of Einstein going, wow, that really is quite a leap from my current paradigm. and rather than digging in our heels about it or going, shame on you for ruining my tidy little world, we're setting everything up to be as ready as possible to benefit from you ruining our party and making us look hopelessly obsolete, you know?
Yeah, bring it.
Yeah, you know, bring it on, you know, and we're more than happy to, you know, be the seeds that got you started and took it. We, you know, what, Evan, how many times have you said, you know, I've taken total physical response to the most absurd end I could have imagined?
Yes.
Well, that's dependent on your imagination, isn't it? So.
Which, you know, okay, to bring this back to the other conversation we were having the other day about the whole, talking about in Chinook Wawa, this one concept for the word for a brush plant that lives near water called willow, locally is referred to as a beaver stick because that's what they eat. So we were talking about, you know, well, do we need to have just the sign for beaver and then the sign for stick? Or do we have, you know, a little picture of a beaver and a picture of a stick?
Yeah.
Or even better, like a figurine of a beaver and the actual stick? Well, then we're, well, why not have a stuffed beaver and a stick? Well, why not have a real beaver?
Yeah.
Well, and then, you know, and then why not, you know, trying to, you know, tackle that beaver while he's eating the stick and getting into this brawl with the beaver over the stick in sign language while we're describing what's happening to ourselves while we're in this, you know, tangle to the death with angry beaver. Yeah. You know, that's, that is total physical response, shared experience, getting into its ridiculous end.
Yeah.
And then we have two beavers. Mm-hmm. My imagination can only go so far.
Right. Well, and even then, so that's the realm where you can imagine it, but you're not actually going to do it. Like, we're not actually bringing beavers to Chinook class, and we're not going to, you know? I mean, I know we'd like
you
to
might.
Think we, you know, I know we'd like to think we would, but you or I, we're not going to. Maybe there's a student who will go, no, you guys said obviously. So I'm going to do obviously. So there's an extent to which we're willing to be OCD, as they say, you know, obsessive and compulsive about immaculate setups and making sure, you know, all the surfaces are wiped clean and free of distracting objects and perfectly set up. But our obsession with that only goes so far. We don't jump up and go get a live beaver. And, you know, maybe at some point somebody's not only going to do that, but go much farther beyond what we think is even convenient or sane. You know?
Or safe.
Or safe. But, you know, I mean, maybe someone discovers that safety and is a decelerator for language acquisition. I don't know.
I'm doubting that. Generally, I've heard that safety is sort of a key, but, you know, hey, I'm willing to bet.
Yeah.
But yeah, but to get really to your point of having that be the, you know, we are prepared for change. That is specifically how we're going about this, is designing this for speed in a collaborative way so that people who come up with these ideas, we are going to be able to readily adopt them and then rebound that information off of as many people as we can so we can start doing these sort of global experiments in language acquisition.
Yeah.
So this question of whose sign language is best to use for which language?
Yeah.
Let's find out.
Yeah. Yeah. And do what you can actually do. I mean, you can't really run an experiment that never really gets off the ground in the first place. You know.
Right.
I'd love
got to have something, some community to work that experiment in.
Yeah, I'd love Stefan's crew to be able to, oh, let's try German and French and, you know. But even what we find time after time working with language is that it is incredibly difficult to even get a single that first language night is the most difficult thing to get off the ground and make happen. And there's such loaded expectations around it that we are retooling a whole set of techniques for dealing with this issue of, it's very difficult to even get the momentum of one thing going. So really, the experiment is going to be the experiment that you're going to do anyway. You know, you've got what you've got. You are ideally set up for the situation that you've got. So run that experiment. Rather than waiting for a different ideal situation to come along, you have the perfect experimental design for what you have.
And most likely to succeed starts bleeding over into limit, because you certainly want to limit your number of props. But the props that you're choosing, you want to make sure that they are the most likely to succeed props. They're the most things that most people use most of the time under most circumstances. Mm-hmm. And then you have conversations that are also most of the time for most people, with other visual aids and music playing that most people are most familiar with. It's all of these safety nets that you're building into this experience of most likely to succeed.
Yeah.
And by using what you can already see from us, I think is the most likely to succeed at this moment. to start your gameplay off, to get it going without having to design a where your keys German in German sign without having a real good grasp of where your keys itself. Yep. You know, I would say at first learn where your keys and then design it towards your target language.
Exactly.
And that's, So Stefan, fantastic question.
Yeah, excellent question. And I hope we answered it.
If we haven't, or if there are other details that you'd like to throw at us, then or you know other people who have listened to this and who are interested, or have other very racy, controversial questions that you'd like to bring up, well, I guess we'll answer them as best we can without setting the world on fire.
Yeah, but in the meanwhile. Lots of good luck, Stefan, and keep us updated.
Send us video.
Yes. So that was Evan and I discussing issues of bridge language and whether or not Where Your Keys offers a universal language for language learning and language revitalization. So you've been listening to episode 11 of the Where Your Keys Language Fluency Game podcast with me, Willem Larson, recorded on March 31st, 2010. Thanks for listening. Thank you.